Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents Make It Clear, Speak and Write to Persuade and Inform by Patrick Henry Winston. Narrated by Peter Lerman. Publishers note, the print and e-book versions of this book include visual elements, such as slide examples, illustrations, and photographs. Foreword by Gil Pratt. Communication is, without question, the most important enabler of human civilization. Without our sophisticated ability to communicate, we would still be living in caves, desperately searching for resources, while living in fear of predators. Every man-made thing, from cars to computers to poetry, results from communication. And yet, the communication bandwidth between human beings is limited to rates on the order of 10 bits per second of Shannon entropy. This rate is astonishingly low, about the same whether we communicate through voice or through writing. By comparison, even ordinary personal computers today can communicate with one another at a gigabit per second, 100 million times faster than human communication. You can think of Shannon entropy as the amount of information that results from the most effective possible compression. How do we overcome our extraordinary communication bandwidth limitation? We do so by exploiting the subject of this book, our ability to tell stories that evoke imagination. Whenever a speaker communicates with a listener, the speaker evokes in the listener's mind a picture, a model, of what is being described. The speaker's words guide the listener's model, assembling in their mind complex ideas drawn from the shared heritage and experience of the speaker and listener. I use the words speaker and listener interchangeably with writer and reader, respectively. This model-based communication technique serves the function of compression, with the shared heritage and experiences of both parties playing the role of the constellation of code words used in typical computational data compression. So, part of the art of effective human communications is the art of compressing data to get through an incredibly small 10 bits per second bottleneck. The other part of effective communication is holding your audience's interest by having a model of their emotional mind and evoking and steering their emotions with skill. There have been few practitioners of both parts of this art more intelligent, capable, and kind than this book's author, Patrick Henry Winston. I knew Patrick for 40 years, from my arrival at MIT as a freshman in 1979 to a few days before his passing in 2019. When I had the good fortune of talking to him about communication one last time. Despite the stark setting of his hospital room and illness, we spoke about many things. First, how the order of 10-bit per second limit seems to exist even for esoteric modes of human communication, like EEG. We spoke about how even our visual system may not convey any higher Shannon entropy due to the compression of retinal images into cognitive meaning by the visual cortex. We discussed how several organizations, including DARPA and startups like Neuralink, are exploring whether novel brain interfaces can surpass this limit. We were both skeptical. Perhaps the cognitive part of our brain faces fundamental limits of input and output information bandwidth that render it impossible to easily surpass the efficiency of normal human communication. We spoke finally about the second part of communication beyond data compression, the art of storytelling and the skill of accurately estimating a listener's state of mind and telling a story in a way to elicit interest. We spoke about how understanding the human mind well enough to draw engagement and focus from one's audience remains a rare but teachable skill. Patrick taught many of us this art. We learned it by listening to him lecture, and by listening to him lecture about lecturing. It is hard to describe the joy of being a student of a great teacher. I had the fortune of having Patrick as my greatest teacher of communication. As is true for many others, I owe Patrick a great deal, and I use the lessons he taught me every day. I cannot imagine a better teacher of this subject than Patrick, or a better storyteller on the art of storytelling. You are in for a treat. Gil Pratt, S.B., 1983, S.M., 1987, Ph.D., 1989, Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, CEO, Toyota Research Institute, Fellow, Toyota Motor Corporation. Prologue. You will be empowered. You will learn how to speak and write well from this book. The return on the time you invest in acquiring knowledge about how to communicate will be bigger than the return on any other investment you make. In this chapter, you learn that there are principles that apply to all kinds of communication, both spoken and written. If you make use of just one principle from reading this book, that principle may be the life-changing one that gets you the job, wins the award, brings in the grant or contract, makes the sale, convinces your boss, excites the venture capitalist, inspires a student, or starts a revolution. If you persuade or instruct, speak or write, this book is for you. You persuade and instruct if you work in business, especially in sales and marketing. You persuade and instruct if you train or educate, if you do research in anything from anthropology to zoology, if you are in defense or law enforcement, if you are a student eager to get a good grade, if you preach or run a nonprofit organization, and certainly if you practice law, medicine, architecture, or journalism. All these have much in common. All involve moving ideas from you to your audience. As you persuade and instruct, you will speak and write. Many present with slides or help prepare such presentations. Some lecture, question witnesses, or run for office. Some write scholarly papers, compose position papers, construct legal briefs, or develop business plans. All these have much in common. You will learn about academic, business, and government communication. When I became a professor of artificial intelligence at MIT, I resolved to study those around me with good communication skills, focusing on what good communicators do that make them good. As a professor, I listened to and gave lectures, research presentations, conference talks, and task force reports. As an author, I wrote and edited books on programming languages, artificial intelligence, and the business of artificial intelligence. As a laboratory director, I wrote proposals and learned to sell research programs. As a member of government science advisory boards, I watched countless briefs on all sorts of subjects. And I learned how to assemble actionable recommendations valued by government sponsors. As an entrepreneur, I interacted with venture capitalists and learned what they value in presentations. I learned a lot. I learned by making mistakes. I learned by experimenting. But mostly I learned because I observed and studied great communicators and listened to knowledgeable critics. When you read this book, you will learn what took me decades to learn from those great communicators and knowledgeable critics, including not only colleagues, authors, researchers, students, journalists, editors, sponsors, lawyers, military officers, politicians, business people, and investors, but also artists, architects, chefs, designers, musicians, theologians, and many more in between. You will learn communication essentials. What you learn about one kind of speaking and writing will make you better at all kinds of speaking and writing. Here are a few representative things I do or help students to do. Present research at a conference. Write a paper for a technical journal. Lecture to hundreds of listeners. Develop a funding proposal. Explain results to a business audience. Send a call to arms in a letter to an editor. Give an after-dinner talk at an awards dinner. Talk through a poster or board. Write a review. Write a recommendation. Survive a thesis defense. deliver a job interview talk. Skill in such activities is broadly applicable to other communication challenges, such as you encounter when you have to present a business idea to a venture capitalist, sell a product to a customer, present a development plan to a manager, express the findings of a consulting engagement, deliver the recommendations of a study group, brief senior people who are unfamiliar with your field, organize a panel discussion, compose an opinion piece, work with an interviewer, inspire those with whom you work. Experiences with challenges such as these have led me to believe that what you learn about one kind of speaking and writing will make you better at all kinds of speaking and writing. You start learning about elements common to all kinds of speaking and writing in Part 1 of this book as I introduce key ideas. I build upon those key ideas in subsequent parts of the book that focus on presentation, instruction, writing, design, and special cases. Eventually, you should read the entire book, but you can start with those parts that address your immediate needs. You will find your own voice. I was 10,000 meters or so up in the air and bored stiff. I picked up an airline magazine, and there it was. In an interview of Ingmar Stenmark, arguably the greatest slalom and giant slalom skier ever, some of the best advice I ever got. The interviewer asked Stenmark how he came to be so good. Stenmark answered that he watched other skiers, analyzed what they did, and adapted some of what he observed to suit his body and overall style. While reading this book, you will be like Stenmark, analyzing my advice and adapting some of it to your own developing style. Then, once you see that there are principles that can make you a more effective communicator, you will look for them everywhere. When you hear good speaking and when you read good writing, you will ask yourself why you think the speaking or writing is good, and whether you have found a principle you want to adapt to your own developing style. You will, as my friends in the humanities like to say, find your own voice. Because I offer many principles in this book, it would be hard to find another person who agrees with all of them. Just keep this in mind. Some speakers and some writers are great even though they violate some of the offered principles. No good speaker or writer violates them all. You will be smarter. As you learn how to organize your communications, you will learn how to organize your thoughts, identify strengths and weaknesses, and focus effort on what matters. You will also learn how to identify and remember the essential elements in the communications you hear and read. Promise. You will learn how to speak and write well from this book. You will be richly rewarded for the time you spend reading it. You will learn, for example, that you should start instruction with an empowerment promise and conclude by noting that you have delivered on that empowerment promise. In this prologue, I make empowerment promises. In the epilogue, I note I have delivered. Part 1. Essentials. Your success likely will be determined by how well you speak, by how well you write, and by the quality of your ideas, in that order. Patrick Henry Winston, American computer scientist, professor, and writer. 1. Essentials of persuasion. In this chapter, you learn principles applicable to communication whenever your purpose is to persuade your listeners and readers to think favorably of you, your idea, or your product. You may want them to hire you, honor you, find your idea interesting, make a better decision, believe your idea is the right way, or buy your product. In particular, you learn how to start and stop spoken presentations and written work so as to ensure you are heard and read. In Essentials for Being Remembered, you learn principles for being remembered once you are heard and read. Show your hand immediately. I spent a lot of time in San Diego, California, as a member of the U.S. Naval Research Advisory Committee, NRAC, a legacy name for a board that advised the U.S. Department of the Navy about science and technology. One day, I was at the Fish Market restaurant with William Weldon, a professor from the University of Texas, and Dolores Etter, a professor from the University of Colorado, also members of NRAC. Somehow, the conversation turned to hiring new faculty. It was my great good luck to ask, "What do you look for in a job interview talk?" Dolores said, and Bill instantly agreed, "The candidate has to show us they have some sort of vision and they have done something about it." "How long do they have to get that across?" I asked. Bill answered this one, "Not more than 5 minutes." 5 minutes. That means you cannot develop your talk like a symphony, holding back your big idea and stupendous results for a big crescendo at the end. Instead, you must show your hand right away. And what is true for a job interview talk is also true for any spoken presentation of your ideas. You have, at most, only a few minutes to convince people to listen to you. If you do not show them that you or your organization have a vision and have done something about it, they may sit there, but they will fog out, thinking about what to have for lunch or responding to text messages. It is even worse for written work. Busy readers will devote not more than a few seconds to deciding whether to read about your ideas. Use the VSN-C framework. So that audiences and readers will see that you have a vision and know that you have done something about it, you need a framework that helps you start and stop. When speaking and writing, I use what I call the Vision Steps News Contributions Framework, frequently abbreviated to VSN-C. You start with a quick statement of your vision. Next, you enumerate the steps you have been taking, and then you supply news by describing something that just happened. You finish with an enumeration of your contributions. Thus, the bulk of your talk, the exposition part, lies between your vision steps and news on the front end and your contributions on the back end. The Vision Steps News Contributions Framework is a foundation for all sorts of spoken and written communication. Vision Steps and News, how to start. Exposition. Contributions, how to stop. Start with your vision. Your vision combines a problem people care about and an approach to that problem's solution. It is necessary but not sufficient to care about the problem yourself. You need to be sure your audience also cares. Express a community-specific vision. Once I did a trial run of a talk I was to give to naval officers at the Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island. I thought my talk was fascinating. It was all about using artificial intelligence to advance the practice of signal processing. Gerald A. Cann, Assistant Secretary of the Navy, did not think so. "Too academic," he said. I got the point and quickly rearranged the talk around what the officers would care about, namely a threat to a naval mission and a new idea about how to deal with the threat. I no longer had a vision centered on signal processing. My vision centered on detecting submarines. If you are a technology entrepreneur or a venture capitalist, your problem is to identify new ways to make money. You are likely to pay attention to a speaker who offers a plan to start a company to build and sell general-purpose robots that make low-cost copies of themselves. If you are the vice president of manufacturing in a large corporation, your problem may be to identify new ways to reduce costs. You are likely to pay attention to a speaker who offers a solution to rapidly escalating costs via low-cost productivity-amplifying robots. If you are an academic, you are curious by nature, and hence interested in anything interesting. But you are most interested in your own field and its unsolved problems. You are likely to pay attention to a speaker who identifies one of those unsolved problems and offers a new way to look at it. Use a community-specific title. Should you title your vision slide, "Vision, You can, but sometimes a community-specific title is better. There are several that you can think of as synonyms, such as, for example, threat, opportunity, goal, and hypothesis. Enumerate your steps. Once you have convinced everyone that you have a vision, a problem, and an approach to solving it, you need to convince everyone that you have done something about it. To be convincing, you start by exhibiting a carefully thought-out plan. Then, you demonstrate your intellectual athleticism by showing that you have made progress on at least one of the steps in the plan. Note that your steps exhibit is not necessarily a history of what you have done. You need not recite, for example, minor steps, obvious steps, or steps that prove to be dead ends. The point is to show you think about what you are doing. As President Dwight D. Eisenhower noted in a speech to the National Defense Executive Research Conference, plans are worthless, but planning is everything. You do not have to have completed all the steps when you apply for a faculty position or a research job. In fact, you should emphasize that the next exciting step in your plan will take place at the fortunate organization whose offer you accept. After all, no one wants to hire someone who will be devoted to polishing up work done at another place. When you apply for a business job, however, the question is not whether you are ready to do something new, but rather whether you can replicate your successes. Stick to steps you have finished. Announce news. The step you have just completed constitutes news because you have just completed it. Announce it with fanfare. Show what you have done right up front, and explain that the rest of your oral presentation or written work will show how you did it. You do this to assure your audience that you are not describing old work. Your presentation or writing is about right now, about today's excitement, about your passion, about what will happen tomorrow and next week. Your audience will feel privileged to learn about it before everyone else. Continue with the body of your talk. Once you have articulated your vision, shown your steps, and announced news, then you enter the body of your talk where you explain what you have done in detail, guided by what you have accumulated when outlining your talk. You should consider breaking up the body of your talk into enumerated parts. That way, you provide places where you can summarize and where those whose attention has strayed can re-engage. Each community has community expectations. If you are giving a technical talk, for example, your community may expect slides with titles such as, for example, problem statement, methods, results, when it works and why, and when it fails and why. Conclude with contributions. Because you want to persuade your listeners and readers that you have done something, you should always conclude a slide-based talk with a slide titled Contributions. A slide bearing only the words thank you persuades no one about anything. Similarly, you should always conclude your written work with a section titled Contributions, or a suitable synonym, that summarizes in a memorable way what you or your organization contributed to engineering prowess, scientific research, business acumen, military readiness, nonprofit achievement, or other work. No one is persuaded by a slide or section titled Conclusions if it just rambles on about how hard the problem is, or who else has worked on it, or what you might do next. What you need to know. Whenever your purpose is to persuade, as in to convince audiences and readers to think favorably about you, your idea, your work, or your product, you should be sure to honor essentials of persuasion. Show your hand immediately. Start with your vision. Identify the problem worth solving and your approach to solving that problem. Explain the steps you are taking to realize your vision. Excite with some news, often about a recent impressive contribution. Put the body of your talk after your introductory vision, steps, and news slides, and before the concluding contributions slide. Consider breaking up the body of your talk into enumerated parts. Conclude with an enumeration of your most important contributions, explicitly, in a slide titled Contributions, or a section titled Contributions. Synonyms for contributions include recommendations, business messages, assured benefits, projected earnings, and what your gift will do. But never conclusions. Where you can learn more. For more on presentation, see Carmine Gallo's book, Talk Like TED, The 9 Public Speaking Secrets of the World's Top Minds. It features stories about successful, much-watched TED Talks. You get used to it. Julia Child, American chef, writer, and television personality, reply when asked by Patrick Henry Winston over dinner, "Is it fun to be famous?" 2. Essentials for being remembered. In Essentials of Persuasion, you learned that the VSN-C framework ensures that you are heard and read. In this chapter, you learn 5 ways to ensure that your spoken presentations and written work are remembered. Subsequent chapters in Part 1 address how you can ensure you are understood. Include a slogan. Ask anyone what they remember about someone's spoken or written communication. If they remember anything, with high probability the answer will be in the form of a short, slogan-like word or phrase that serves as a kind of handle. In my field, artificial intelligence, you might remember, "Oh, that's the person who talked about subsumption architecture, or backpropagation, or merge operation." Sometimes the slogan is the name of a system. "Oh, yes, that's the person who led the work on Genesis, the story understanding system, or Watson, the Jeopardy playing program." You should decide on a suitable slogan for your work and be sure everyone knows what that slogan is. In an oral presentation, you can emphasize your slogan by saying explicitly, "The key idea in my work, the idea I want you to remember, is the power of slogan." In written work, you can put your slogan in your title, abstract, beginning, and end, and in a conspicuous section titled, "The Key Idea, Slogan." Include a symbol. Symbols also serve as handles on work. Edward Tufte's The Visual Display of Quantitative Information includes a discussion of Charles Joseph Minard's famous graphic showing what happened when Napoleon invaded Russia. Minard's graphic has become a kind of symbolic handle for Tufte's book. Pictures, drawings, maps, graphs, and graphics can serve as symbols. Some symbols work in harness with a slogan. In one following example, the symbol is the arch and the slogan is one-shot learning. Winston's concept learning program learned something definite about arches from each example via one-shot learning. It learned from the first example the general idea, from the second, the sides cannot touch, from the third, the top can be wedge-shaped, and from the fourth, there must be support relations. I exploit the near-miss concept frequently throughout this book to reinforce what to do and what not to do in your spoken and written communication. I mark examples of near misses with an icon in the margin, in this book's print edition. You'll hear it verbalized as near miss in the audio edition. Include a salient idea. Surprisingly, a presentation can have too many good ideas. Most people can remember only a few, typically not more than 3. Accordingly, in your talks and writings, you should make 1, 2, or 3 ideas explicitly salient. By salient idea, I mean an idea that sticks out, not just an important idea. Otherwise, people may remember you as having a lot of ideas, But that is not as good as remembering you as the owner of a particular...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?